With stations all over the U.S., North America, Puerto Rico, Guam, and by satellite, over 600 or 700 affiliates now, something like that. We are Coast to Coast AM. I'm Connie Willis, your host. You can catch me at ConnieWillis.com with Blue Rock Talk TV, bringing you Far Out Thursday, Bigfoot Friday, and taking you on live investigations to Creepy Hotspots, my latest project, where we go live virtually. You are a part of it. You walk with me, you talk with me. And it is exciting. In fact, we got one coming up this week. I hope that you'll join me on my next one. So sign up at ConnieWillis.com, veterans at half price, and Coast fans at a nice discount too. ConnieWillis.com. Another show I have is Connie After Dark, where you enjoy a drink with me at my virtual bar. I hope you'll check that out as well. ConnieWillis.com. Tonight's featured guest, H.G. Tudor is his name, a diagnosed narcissistic psychopath who provides unrivaled content, absolutely, and insight into his world. He's written more than 50 books, hundreds of blog articles, created over 1,000 videos, and a knowledge vault that contains over 200 products to allow you to understand the mind of the narcissist. He delivers this in a brutal and honest reality, which delivers freedom to millions who have run into this situation. He's with us tonight because I had heard him on, passing around somewhere, heard his, recognized voice. Once you've heard it, you'll know who it is every time, as H.G. Tudor. Very strong, strong-willed, determined, and committed with the answers that you have about if anyone is truly narcissistic, if they have a personality disorder. He is diagnosed narcissistic psychopath. If you've gone through situations where you've dealt with anyone like this, because some people throw this word out, and these words out, and these disorders out, as if it's just a joke, as if it's nothing, but it's real. And if you've ever dealt with it, and you've been a victim of it, had to deal with it, you know how serious this conversation is tonight. And you'll also appreciate what he's doing to help you know what to expect. And he's straight up about it. First-time guest, H.G. Tudor, welcome to Coast AM. How are you?
I'm very well, Connie. Thank you for inviting me along. Pleasure to be here.
I'd like to know how you first learned who you are.
Certainly. From a very young age, for as long as I can remember, I always knew that I was set apart from other individuals, that I was different, superior. I realized in interactions primarily with my siblings that they looked at the world in a way that was different to me, that they felt things differently to the way that I did. And I would question them sometimes about certain things, primarily related to what they felt. And they used to find it quite amusing that I would ask them, what does that make you feel? Why are you making that expression? And they would ask, what do you mean, H.G.? I'd say, well, when you smile because you've done this, why are you smiling? Because it didn't resonate with me. And as time went on, I realized that I found it entertaining to cause things to happen to people, primarily bad things, that when I did so, there was this delicious sensation, power, that was obtained. The more that I did it, the more that I realized that it gave me something that I needed. And I didn't have a name for any of this. I also witnessed behaviors of my mother, because she's a narcissist. And when I would see the way that people would kowtow to her, the way that they would come along, kissing the pinky ring, bending the knee, scraping the elbow, etc., it seemed to me that the power that she wielded was, I recall thinking to myself, I want that power. So I when I first witnessed that, I thought that was the moment that I understood who I was. It wasn't. It was merely part of the journey that my narcissism got going along. If I recognized that the power was something that I had, but I wanted more, the power over individuals. And it wasn't until after I'd left university, this former girlfriend of mine, my postgraduate, explained to me that she said, I believe that you are a narcissist and a psychopath. Narcissistic personality disorder and antisocial personality disorder. And when she said this to me, I felt myself bristle internally, which is, of course, when anybody ever threatens my control, which is, I'll come to tell you about later. Control is everything to my kind. But I invited her because I was able to control that sensation of irritation and annoyance that she would label me in such a way. I was able to control it, and I invited her to tell me more. I have a thirst for knowledge, and particularly when it comes to learning about myself. And so she explained, and I listened. And I wasn't going to give her any credit or any admission that she was right. I mean, said, that's all very interesting. Thank you for sharing that with me. And then I departed. And thereafter, I made inquiry, and I thought, actually, I can see what she means. I now have a label for what I am. And that was how I came to know. And thereafter, I was diagnosed as a consequence of interactions with further medical professions, at a later date. So I've always known that I think different. I've always known that I manipulate. I've always known that I see the world in a different way to people. But I didn't have a label for it until my early 20s.
And that's what a lot of people have gone through, that they didn't know even that there was a label that existed. HG, you don't mind. I don't know if you need to be closer to the mic, just so we can hear you a little better. I don't know if you can make a difference. Can you get a little closer to your mic or?
Well, I'm on the telephone, so I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know if any improvement can be made there, unfortunately.
Okay. Okay. Well, it sounded a little better when you did that, so that makes some sort of a difference,
okay.
But I appreciate that. So, you know, throughout your conversation, what you just said, boy, there was a lot of questions I had there. One of them was, well, but let's go back first. What is a narcissist and how many different types are there? And because people really do throw that term around as if it's really nothing, but this is serious stuff.
Okay. A useful starting point would be the classification of people generally. So all people have narcissistic traits. That doesn't mean that they are a narcissist. Mm-hmm. So you experience pride, envy, anger. Those are narcissistic traits. Many people, but not all, have empathic traits. Honesty, compassion, being an excellent listener, having a moral compass, having a desire to heal and fix and so forth. The empath group have both empathic and narcissistic traits and considerable emotional empathy. Their empathic traits are stronger than their narcissistic traits. Sometimes they may have strong narcissistic traits, but even stronger empathic traits. They might have low narcissistic traits and strong empathic traits. So there's differing combinations, but their empathic traits are always greater than their narcissistic traits. Then there are what I call the normals, largest group of roughly about half the people on the planet, thereabouts. These individuals, they also have emotional empathy, but they have it for a small radius of people, their children, their parents, their siblings, friends, colleagues, maybe neighbors too. They're not particularly bothered about the little orphan, Rwanda, or the homeless guy in the center. Yes, they will recognize that it's sad that person has nowhere to live, but they're not motivated to feel to do anything about it. I call them the nose-down normals. They are there just trying to get through life. And they also have narcissistic and empathic traits. But they're geared to enabling them to get through life with the minimum fuss and inconvenience. Then you have narcissistic people. These aren't narcissists. These have very low emotional empathy. It's there. they have very strong narcissistic traits which outrank their empathic traits. They might be mistaken for being a narcissist, but they're not. Then we have the narcissists. Now, of course, there is a definition of a narcissist as per narcissistic personality disorder as set out in the DSM-5. However, when people read all of that, they might go, well, I understand, I kind of get that, but what does that really look like in day-to-day interaction? So what I've done through my own experience of understanding what I am and having lived with and amongst my kind for many years, there are narcissists in my family, I've worked with them, I've outmaneuvered them, I've dealt with them professionally, they're in my friendship group, etc. That's why I know so much about them, because like any great predator, I have studied prey on both sides of the fence. Now, with the narcissist, we are devoid of emotional empathy. We don't have any emotional empathy at all. No conscience, no sense of remorse. We might fake that we care. We might fake compassion, but we don't actually have it. It's not part of who we are. We are manipulative. Some of our kind, largest group within the narcissist, are instinctively manipulative. Some of the kind, such as me, we're aware that we're manipulative. The narcissist must pursue four things: fuel and control, character traits, and physical benefits. Fuel is the emotional output or gesture of somebody else. So if you say to me, HG, I love you, that's given me positive fuel. You validate me. If you say, HG, you're a complete asshole, that's negative fuel, but you're still fueling me even though you've insulted me. If you make me a cup of tea, that's a positive gesture. If you buy me a car, that's a positive gesture. If you don't repay me the money that you ought to have done and tell me that you're not going to do it, that's a negative response, which is also negative fuel. In order to sustain us, we need this fuel. And every other human being provides that to us in varying degrees and different levels of potency. And we have to get that from you. We also have to control everybody that we interact with. By interaction, that means if you pop into our thoughts, if we see you, if we're talking to you, if you send us a text message, you come on our radar, and we are driven to control you. Most narcissists are driven by that instinctively, some, as I say, in a calculated manner. Nearly all narcissists operate in an instinctive way, and nearly all narcissists are unaware of what they are. That's part of what the self-defense mechanism is. We also acquire character traits. Quite simply, we bolt on bits of other people to make ourselves whole. I can expand on that later. And residual benefits are basically money, great sex, somewhere to live, access to networks, a whole range of things that we take from people. And everything that we do when it comes to an interaction with another person is in pursuit of at least one of those things, possibly all four. It's pathological in terms of, excuse me, it's pathological, it's deep-seated. We can't change. We can't be healed. We look at the world through a different lens to you. We look at the world through a lens of control. It's very simple. Are you giving me control or are you threatening control? And everything that anybody else does in and around and in relation to us goes through that filter. Are you giving me control or are you threatening my control? And everybody must be kept under control or brought under control. And we do so through a range of different manipulations.
Why is that? Is that because I've been told, HG, I've been told that the reason why is insecurity. Is that why? And would you even be able to tell me why, since you are one?
We need control because we were created from an environment where we had no control. So, briefly, a narcissist is created from a genetic predisposition towards that. Think of that as the ingredients of a cake. You've got to have those ingredients. And then there has to be a lack of control environment. Think of that as the oven at the right temperature and that the ingredients go in the oven for the right period of time. So if you don't have the ingredients, but you have the oven at the right time and the right temperature, You won't get a narcissist. If you just have the ingredients, but the oven isn't switched on, or the cake mix goes in but it's taken out partway through, you don't get a narcissist. Now, a lack of control environment might be being physically abused, sexually abused, neglected, being told, well done, you scored 2 goals. Why didn't you score 3? You came 3rd in your exam. Why didn't you come top? You swam 100 meters in that time. Why didn't you do it faster? I call it grade B syndrome, meaning good, but not good enough. You could always go better. Run faster, climb higher, achieve more. It might be a gilded environment where the child is given everything that they need and they're told that they're absolutely fantastic, but actually they're not. There's lots of different lack of control environments. So when you have that genetic predisposition, ingredients, and when you combine it with that lack of control environment, the oven, a narcissist is created. And because we were created in this crucible of a lack of control environment, this means we are hypersensitive to the issue of control. So in the way that a dog hears a frequency that you and I cannot, the narcissist is calibrated to instinctively, and in some instances in an aware fashion, pick up on these threats to control. You, Connie, wouldn't see it as a threat to control, but the narcissist does. And because we perceive, and it's our perception, because we operate in a different reality to your reality, and of course, there's no such thing as an objective reality, everything is perception. Our perception is that you're threatening our control. So our narcissism, as a self-defense mechanism, basically wants to prevent us feeling powerless. When somebody threatens our control, it takes us in the unconscious back to when we were powerless as a child, unimportant, weak, and vulnerable. Because we haven't learned an alternative method of coping with that situation, our narcissism is the coping mechanism. It was created like some kind of autopilot to come in and defend us in those situations. So you wouldn't see a situation where the narcissist control is being threatened. But the narcissist unconsciously does, or where it's an aware narcissist, consciously sees it. Where it's unconscious, narcissism steps in and basically says, there's a threat to control occurring with this narcissist. We now need to do something to make this narcissist assert control and nullify the threat. And we might nullify the threat by the use of physical violence, or denying something, or telling a lie, or giving you a word salad, or triangulating you with someone, or destroying some property. There's lots of different ways to go about it. But quite simply, our need for control arises out of the fact that at some point in our development, we didn't have that control. Therefore, it almost as if the narcissism overcompensates. You know, in the same way that somebody might be exposed to something when they're a child, it creates an allergy when they're older.
Got it. HG Tutor, more to go. And lots more to go. Stay with us, Coast to Coast AM. It's another very interesting show here on Coast to Coast AM, the real theater of the mind. Speaking of which, that's how I found H.G. Tudor, our guest for tonight. He was talking about, and what he does talk about, is being a narcissistic psychopath. And he does it in such a theatrical way, having a background myself of improv and theater and acting and all that. You see characters and you learn, and even in radio, you know, that real, this reminded me almost of old time radio, because you don't see his face. You don't see pictures of HG. You just hear him. And it's almost like a Vincent Price way. At least that's how I would look at it, as Vincent Price, or just very theatrical. And so as I listened, when I very first heard him, it was his voice. As you can imagine, radio people love to hear other voices. And when we hear one that catches our attention, as I started listening to his topic and what he was talking about, I thought, wow, this guy's really giving answers to people that have the questions. So I started listening to the questions that people gave him, or that he started with. And I also compared him to other people on the internet doing the same thing. And believe me, there's a lot of people doing it now. And at one point, nobody talked about this. Nobody talked about this, much less gave it a name, or even said that this was real, and gave people any type of credit who turned out to be victims from this. But he would give honest answers that some of the other ones, I think, are giving what they believe are honest answers, but they're giving it from a standpoint of outside of being a narcissist, where he, as a narcissist, is saying, hey, like, for example, and I'll go ahead and ask him this. So HG, in the other, a ton of YouTube channels, a ton of other sites, and whether it's YouTube or not, wherever they are, a lot of other people. And hey, I'm not saying anything about them at all. I think they're great in helping people learn what this is. I enjoy learning what it is too. And there's a lot of people out there teaching it, therapists telling you what to do. But there are times where people ask, hey, you know, I'm dealing with a narcissist. How do I stop them? How do I get away from this? How do I crush him or her? And then they'll give an answer of here's the best way to do it. And they usually have an answer. Your answer is different than their answer. What is your answer? If I say to you, hey, HG, I'm having trouble with a narcissist psychopath. How do I crush him?
The first thing you need to do is ascertain precisely, are you dealing with a narcissist? So, because sometimes people are mistaken, so that needs to be assessed. Okay. And then the second point is, if you are, the last thing you ever try to do is crush a narcissist. Tempting as it might be to take a baseball bat to the melon-shaped head of a particular narcissist and cave it in, that may well give certain people a degree of satisfaction after the abuses they've suffered. In terms of trying to destroy a narcissist, you won't, because the narcissist, through the operation of our narcissism, will either fight back against you. We are designed to control. We're designed to manipulate. You're not. Everybody can manipulate. Of course they can. But we're designed to do it. And empathic people are normally our first choice victims. And manipulation doesn't come readily or naturally to empathic individuals, so they'll invariably mess it up. Moreover, if you then continue to engage with a narcissist, you're actually going to give us what we want, because your shouting and your screaming and your insults gives us fuel. You're playing into our hands. You'll also be increasing your own emotional thinking, which I won't go into detail about that now, but quite simply, that means that you make bad decisions, not based on logic, but based upon an emotional response, which you think is the right response, but it isn't. The more that you interact with a narcissist, the greater your emotional thinking goes, and you'll make more and more mistakes. And you'll also increase the risk of the narcissist coming and hoovering, coming back to you at a later juncture. So if you try and engage with the narcissist, destroy or crush the narcissist, all you'll do is, one, give us fuel; two, increase your emotional thinking; three, receive an adverse consequence, because we will invariably fight back. And if that doesn't work, the narcissist will withdraw from you. And in our world, that still amounts to an assertion of control over you, because it's our decision to retreat. You might think, oh, the narcissist scared me, let's run away. Well, you may well think that. But in the narcissist's world, his unconscious narcissism has convinced him this person's an idiot, don't engage with him anymore, retreats, and that's a form of assertion of control. And fourthly, you increase the risk of you being hoovered. Many people talk about that you can achieve these things. One, you can't, and two, you should never attempt to do so. What you ought to do is apply the principle that I have devised, which is go so. You get out and you stay out. Now, it's tempting to want to get revenge against the narcissist. It's tempting to want to bring them down, because we hurt people. We abuse people physically, sexually, emotionally, psychologically, financially. We can ruin lives. Make life, people's lives, very, very difficult indeed, all different arenas, romantically, socially, business, place, work, and narcissists are everywhere. I'll touch upon that later in terms of where they pop up. So it's tempting to want to get your own back on the narcissist, but that's the last thing that you should be doing. You ensure that you get away from us and you stay away from us, and we absolutely hate that. That is how you succeed. You don't fight the battle by coming onto our battlefield. You win the war by not fighting it in the first place.
So walk away from the radar.
Not just walk away, but to walk away and to stay away, to get out and stay out. You ensure that you don't have any physical interaction with us. You ensure that you don't communicate with us and that we can't communicate with you, so that we can't text you, social media message you, send you a note wrapped to a pigeon. You ensure that you don't sneak on our social media to take a look, because that's a breach of no contact. Many people don't realize that, but it is. You don't spend your time ruminating and talking to other people about what we've done. That's another breach of no contact. You discipline yourself to kick it out of your head. And I do that with a range of clients, teaching them techniques to remove those thoughts and feelings about the narcissist. Many people come to me and they say, HG, I'm in no contact. But the narcissist keeps texting me. How do I make him stop? And I say, that's not no contact. And they go, oh, really? They don't realize how wide no contact is. And that's because many of the people that are material about narcissists and no contact don't truly understand it. We have to control you. And therefore, we will look at lots of ways of trying to get in contact with you to assert control. But if you make it too difficult for the narcissist, we'll just go and find somebody else. We'll pick up somebody else instead.
Right. So
a lot of the time, people are actually their own worst enemy. But the narcissist has got rid of them, dumped them unceremoniously from a relationship, and has moved on to somebody else. And the victim's left thinking, why did that happen? Why has he picked her instead? Why has he gone off with her? What's she got that I haven't? And rather than think, actually, I've just been abused and this is a lucky escape because he's looking elsewhere, they contact the narcissist. Why have you done this to me? They want answers. And this is all driven by their emotional thinking. So you have to keep us away from you, and you have to keep yourself away from us also, because your addiction, when you're an empath, you're addicted to the narcissist. And we prey on that also. So the correct response is to implement GOSO, to get out and to stay out. Remove yourself wholesale from the narcissist, and then ensure that you stay away from the narcissist in terms of preventing us from contacting you, and ensuring that you don't put yourself back on our radar in some shape or form. That's how to do it.
Do you, if you don't have anyone in your radar at the time, do you sometimes go back in time to your past people?
Oh, absolutely. And some narcissists will do that. It's called hoovering, that they will hoover, say, a former girlfriend or former boyfriend, and try and resurrect the relationship with them, or merely contact them to assert control and draw fuel from them, perhaps get a residual benefit, borrow some money from them, for instance. So as I sit here now, if one of my former girlfriends pops into my head just a random thought, my narcissism dictates that she is now on the radar, and it asks this question, is she under control? I have no data about her. Therefore, she cannot be under control. I have to now obey the first law of narcissism, which is all appliances, because that's the way that we see people. Your appliances, your objects, your toasters, your television sets, your refrigerators, you're there to serve us, to do things for us. So the first law of narcissism is applied, namely, you must do what I want. You must be brought under control and kept under control. So then I decide, do I contact this ex-girlfriend? Is it easy for me to contact her? Have I got a telephone number? So I ring her up. Oh, hello, Rebecca, how are you? It's HG. Oh, hello, how lovely to hear from you, HG. Because she may not have realized quite what I was. She talks to me. She signals in talking to me that I've got control over her now. It's not control in the sense that I'm making her do things for me, although it sometimes can be that. The very fact that she's responding favorably to me tells me that she's under control. And she's giving fuel by saying, oh, how are you? Lovely to hear from you. What have you been up to? Now, I don't want any character traits from her. I don't want any residual benefits from her. But I must control her. And if fuel's available, I'll take it. If so,
So, HG, okay, you had mentioned before your sister had helped you with something and you didn't want to give her credit. What is it? Why is it that you don't want to give someone credit where credit is due? I would think you would like that. And what is the fear of failure? What's that about?
Well, in some instances, we will give credit if giving credit provides us with control. So what you have to understand is that the narcissist manipulates you both in a benign way. So if I was to lend somebody some money, I don't do it out of the goodness of my heart, because there isn't any there. I do it to control that person by making them indebted to me and thank me for it. If I help an old lady cross the road, I don't do it because I care and I'm compassionate. I do it because she'll be grateful to me, which gives me some fuel. It makes me look good. Perhaps my girlfriend is there, and so she sees me do it, so it contributes to my facade. So, but I'm still manipulating my girlfriend by triangulating her with the old lady and manipulating the old lady by appearing to be kind to her, but I'm not genuinely kind. So we manipulate in benign fashion and also the more obvious malign ways where we're horrible to you. Both are manipulations. So when it comes to credit, in instances, we won't give people credit because to do so acknowledges that they might be, that they are viewed as superior to us. And if somebody's superior to us, that means that we don't have control over them. And it comes back to that issue of control. If you walk past the narcissist and don't acknowledge him, you've ignored him, which wounds the narcissist. You've threatened his control. If we do something and we fail at it, and other people know that there's failure, that threatens our control because people have a poorer account of us. So it's not actually per se a fear of failure. It's what does it represent? And all roads lead back to the issue of control. Somebody leaving us threatens our control. Somebody saying that we're useless at our job threatens our control. Somebody doesn't invite us to their birthday party. It threatens our control. Somebody says, where have you been? You're 10 minutes late. Threatens our control. Over and over again. And often you'll do it inadvertently. You make yourself a cup of tea and you don't make the narcissist the cup of tea. You threaten the narcissist's control because you're inadvertently signaling to him that he doesn't matter. Now, a non-narcissist wouldn't think anything of it. But in the world of the narcissist, in his unconscious, the narcissism detects that you've not given control. Therefore, it must motivate the narcissist to assert control over you. So it causes the narcissist to believe that you're a selfish person in that moment, and it makes the narcissist angry, furious. So he turns and says, hey, Sally Selfish, where's my brew? And you say, oh, I didn't even know that you wanted one. Well, you should know that I would want one. You're always doing things for yourself, and you never think about me. Notice the use of always and never. Narcissists like to talk in terms of absolute. You're always nagging me. You never help me. You never put out anymore. You're always telling me what to do. Because in that moment, and the narcissist operates in the moment, the narcissism, through a distortion field, causes us to believe that you've never, ever, ever helped us in the history of time. Because that then motivates the narcissist to do something. When your throat is dry and your head feels a little bit light, you're dehydrated, your body is signaling to you, Connie, you're dehydrated, go and drink some water. So that you protect yourself, that you don't become ill or even run the risk of dying. The narcissism creates a thought in the mind of the narcissist, this person is selfish, and makes the narcissist feel furious or envious or full of hatred to motivate the narcissist to then seek that control or nullify the threat to control and draw fuel from you.
When along the way, when you lose friends and you lose the people close to you, when they figure it out, or really don't figure it out, but they just kind of want to get away, does this ultimately, I mean, ultimately at the end, doesn't it make you empty inside? Do you ever feel that? Well, or do you not even let yourself feel that?
We are, in effect, empty inside. And what gets rid of the emptiness is the provision of the fuel. So if you could imagine that this chasm, this howling wilderness, and for me, I don't experience it particularly often because I'm so well-fueled and I have an extensive and complex fuel matrix of people that I interact with very easily because of the way that my narcissism operates, that I interact with those people. So they provide me with all this fuel. It starts to fill up the chasm, of course, it never fills. But for less evolved narcissists, what I call lesser and mid-range narcissists, those narcissists, although they don't know what it is, they have that sensation of unease, a nagging itch that needs to be scratched. And as their fuel levels drop, if they're not getting fuel from people, and if their control is being threatened, that chasm makes itself feel all the more apparent. It's a sense of impending doom. The walls of the world are going to collapse on them. Something isn't right. And ultimately, it will lead to neglect, can in some instances self-harm, In extreme instances, suicide, and that is very rare. Most narcissists won't do that. They may well threaten it a lot. But they often do it. But there is that chasm in the fuel. And when the fuel arrives, it has a settling effect. It starts to, the sense of unease recedes. That itch is being scratched now. Paranoia fades away for a while. And then all of a sudden, as it keeps rising, the narcissist feels a sense of almost warmth, a rush within, starts to feel powerful. Even more fuel arrives, and then the narcissist feels brilliant, bullish, belligerent, invulnerable, impregnable, a mighty colossus striding the earth, capable of achieving anything. And that's so you'll see it in varying ways. The narcissist might sit there looking timid and anxious, and then another time you see the narcissist being expansive and full of himself because of the provision of the fuel. And that fuel level goes down and then comes back up. If we're not receiving it, it drains like a field drying out. If you wound us, that fuel drops even faster.
H.G. Tudor is who we're talking with, and he is a diagnosed narcissistic psychopath. And he's got more than 50 books, hundreds of blog articles. You can go to narcite.com, narcsite.com. You'll learn more, and many videos. I think you'll enjoy them just like tonight. You'll learn a whole lot. More to come. Connie Willis here on Coast to Coast AM.